Podcast meeting brilliant minds and looking at the world around them. How do they 360 themselves and 360 the world? Jamie Neal, the host, asks many questions about their mindset and how they fundamentally operate their world and the world around them. Here at 360 Yourself, we are very proud and honored to be partnered with General Assembly. We embrace this with open arms to a new adventure. General Assembly is a global tech education company focused on the most in-demand areas today. So that's anything from UX, digital marketing, coding, data science, data analytics, to travel writing and ethics. Our/their main goal is to get you where you want to be. You can find out more about them at ga.co online or across all socials at ga_London. We also encourage you to please rate and comment about us on Apple Podcasts. If you do enjoy what we bring to your ears, we'd love to hear about it. Hello and welcome back to 360 Yourself. I hope you're having a beautiful morning, afternoon and evening, wherever you are in the world. Of course, my standard and lovely introduction to all my episodes, because I honestly do. I love what I do, and I love that we have so many different listeners from all around the world that are probably listening either in the morning or the afternoon or the evening. I think it's brilliant. I talk to people a lot about random things, and I love kind of learning and discussing things. And something that I've been talking about recently is about avatars. I don't know if you know what avatars are. If you do know, that's brilliant. If you don't know, I'll enlighten you. So basically, avatars, imagine you have a sim. So a sim is sort of an avatar, something that you control. So imagine creating your own perception of yourself on an avatar. So creating your own sim in a world that basically is your avatar. And suddenly I saw recently an animator creating two different separate videos. One video was someone moving around, and the other video was the same thing of someone moving around at the same time. But one of them had one clothing on and the other one had another outfit. But the one on the right was an animation and the one on the left was the real time. And I was watching going, that is incredible how you can take a real video and then put it into an animation and then dress them totally differently. And it goes to that kind of conversation about we are in lockdown at the moment and we're not having many human interactions. So the only way to communicate is via Zoom, and also a lot of people are using CGI to create these worlds within worlds for us to kind of witness at our home, because we can't go away, we can't go to the Bahamas, we can't go to Singapore, we can't travel anywhere at the moment. So we're having to use our imagination and to use the internet and to use technology to put us in those places. So people who work in the kind of graphic design world and who animation, especially in the CGI, are having a ball of a time because they're creating all these avatars and they're exploring how we kind of utilize imagination in these worlds. And it thinks about what I think about, what is the future going to be like? Are we always going to be wanting to explore more and pushing that sort of avatar digital world where we potentially never leave our houses? Because obviously, like, I don't know about you, but I honestly love meeting people. I love exploring energies and I love talking to people physically. As much as I do like my home comfort, I honestly love meeting new people. So I'm like, the balance has to be right for me. I don't mind being living on the digital world and being on Instagram, but I also want to go out and go to the beach and see someone and see a dog and touch the dog and pet them and all that sort of thing, rather than see a dog on Instagram and go, oh, that's really cute. I want to see the dog in real life. Is that just something to think about, to be careful as well about how, I don't know, how much we consume our content and how we utilize those new evolving technologies with avatars as well. And to go, it's okay to go outside once it's safe. Like, that's really important. And we don't get accustomed to behavioral traits of just staying inside and playing with avatars. That's a bit sad, isn't it? I mean, most people want to go out and have fun and meet new people. But thinking about these things, I've been chatting to a brilliant film director. He does theatrical kind of visuals, and he works in animation. He used to be an art director, an ad agency. And he's worked with amazing brands like Nike, Apple, Xbox, YSL, Adidas. And he works quite regularly with the Hollywood actor Will Smith. I mean, that's a bit of a bell drop, isn't it? But of a mic drops moment, isn't it? When you're talking about Will Smith and casually in a conversation, yeah, I work with Will Smith. Thank you very much. So I'm really, really excited to introduce you to Quintin. Hello, Quintin. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you, Jamie?
Very, very well. So whereabouts are you in the world? I always ask my guests because I'm fascinated, because I hope someone says something like so random, like Uganda or something. Or
no, it's not that crazy. I'm in a small town in France called Annecy, which is on the east part, like a bit southeast of France, in the French Alps, you know, in the mountain chain, the French Alps. So yeah, that's where I am.
So is it quite cold there at the moment? I mean, we've got a massive kind of a storm, like thunderstorm over here at the moment. Is it cold where you are at the moment with lots of snow?
It's usually quite cold. We have a lot of snow. We have like every winter we have quite a bit of snow. But this year it's been like on and off. You know, we've had like very interesting, like a lot of like snow moments, and then we've had some more like warm days, I would say. So now it's kind of in between, you know, it's like just this gray, like rainy weather, and it's not interesting.
I'm just outside of London. I'm like 4 hours from London. I'm in a place called Devon, and so everyone in London town is getting a lot of snow, and obviously I spoke to someone in Scotland, in Edinburgh, and they were like, they had to get like these massive welly boots and stuff, and wearing like gloves and like a glasses and to get outside the house because it's like thick snow. But down here, I've literally just got sun and a bit of ice. Like, there's nothing. The first time I saw snow, I swear, was when I was 16 years old. That was literally.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. No, my parents don't like snow really. So like, to go to like the French Alps to go skiing was like the last thing on the thing. Their holiday is like going to like Egypt, where it's blisteringly hot.
Mm. No, yeah, I love skiing, and that's why also I'm here, because I love the mountain, I love skiing, and it's tough because, you know, like it's been like a couple of years where, because of global warming, it's been very, very warm at a higher altitude, you know, like in the resort and stuff. Yeah. And so they've had like very little snow for the past like 7 years almost, you know, so they're struggling. And this year it's the first time in years that we have an okay winter, you know, with like decent snow, you know, in the resorts. So like, and they're closed because of COVID. So it's kind of like, they would be able to like, you know, like actually like make money this year, all the resorts, and like cover the loss. But because it's COVID, they closed everything. So we can't go ski and they can't do anything.
Can't do anything these days, can you? Can't do anything. No. And now
they removed.
Also in the UK, they made a rule yesterday. I think it was yesterday that if you do go away, you have to pay your own hotel, which is about $2,000 for that 10 days if you go to the red list countries, which is mental. So anyone that is even working has to come back in quarantine for 10 days. So any kind of, I used to work a lot more outside of the UK. Most of my work was traveling. And now I just don't think that traveling for a long time, because clients just don't want to pay for it.
It's tricky. I mean, I feel like we could still get away with it like a couple of weeks ago when we were like going on production outside our country. We could say, oh, it's a film production, so we don't have to quarantine, you know, and that was kind of like an exception. But I feel like it's getting less and less possible to do that.
I know. I had a couple of pencils out in Europe in March. Mm. I don't think they're going to happen now.
Oh, yeah.
So sad.
That sucks.
I know. It's just, I don't know about you, but I was going through like different emotions. So the first kind of like
lockdown that we had in the UK, I was like, cool, really enjoying it, time off, not get any FOMO, no anxiety, nothing, brilliant. And then I started working but probably like June, July, and I worked like quite a lot last year, only in the UK though. I did a couple of Zoom shoots and stuff, and then it came to like, I think it's like end of like December, like Christmas time, and then we knew that we were going into our third lockdown or whatever. And now I'm kind of just like, I'm just over it now. I'm just like,
Yeah, you're done.
I just
I
was like,
know.
I think everyone was kind of optimistic that this summer was going to be the kind of live event and we could go
I
back to
know.
summer things.
Yeah.
Now Glastonbury's cancelled and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
And we're potentially looking for things to be sort of in quotation marks back to normal to maybe like April 2022, potentially.
Yeah,
And
it's insane.
we just don't know. And now I'm at my end of my tether. But like, I think for work wise, like I've been doing a lot of like Zoom call shoots, which is mental. I mean, how has it been for you work wise though? Because obviously we thought beforehand that you do a lot of kind of CGI digital stuff.
Yeah, I mean, it's been very, very different and very strange. As you said, I'm coming from a CGI background. So at the beginning of the first lockdown, I got hit by a wave of people whose shot got canceled. Like music artists or even brands, they had like this whole plan to like shoot films. Like in South Africa or whatever. Like they had all these things, and all of a sudden, lockdown comes, COVID comes, and they can't do anything. So they're like, okay, how do we still communicate with animation, with CGI, with like any other medium? And so I got hit by a lot of opportunities, and so it's been actually. The first lockdowns has been very crazy and a big opportunity, if I can say so, for my work, because I was able to get project that I'm sure I would have maybe gotten like in a couple of years, but not, but not right now, because I'm still kind of a young director. And so yeah, I got the Will Smith stuff. I got Drake hitting me up for video. And yeah, all these things, I maybe they would have happened like later in the yeah later in time, but because of COVID, I feel like it just speed up everything for me at this point. So yeah, I got pretty lucky for that. But then, after this first wave of like proposals, I had more proposals for like live action stuff, and then I realized how everything just takes three times the time it would really normally take, to do like any project. Everything is just like never sure, like you put like you lock like shoot dates, and then they are postponed because yeah, because there's a new lockdown somewhere else or whatever. So it's like always moving and very, very tiring,
I know. I'm meant to be shooting this Saturday, and I still don't even know if I'm doing it. Like,
Right. Yeah, I know.
what is it? We're Wednesday now. So
Yeah.
that's like a couple of days away, and I still don't know yet. So I'm just like, it's just frustrating. But like I was saying beforehand, I know you work with Will Smith and you've done a couple of projects with him. And so how is it like working with him on a project?
I mean, it's very. I mean, obviously, like I'm not in direct contact with him all the
For
time.
sure.
Like I'm through his team and stuff. Yeah, I mean, it's crazy. Like they have this whole strategy around Will Smith, where they really want to collaborate with as many people as possible, and they really want to not only like do basic, like social content of like just him, like shoot, like photographing like his holidays or like his morning routine or whatever. Like they really want to bring art in it, like artistic collaborations, and I think that's a really, really interesting direction. And I mean, it's very like very flow, very like smooth, I would say. Like I'll just send an idea usually, they would discuss it for a couple of days, and then if we like where we are, we just like start producing it and making it, basically.
I
And
love that. That's just so quite nice. It's like going, yeah, I've got an idea for Will Smith. Cool. Okay. Yeah. Cool. Let's go. We're ready to go then. It's quite an easy process.
it's very fast. It's very fast. There's no like headache or anything. And now like we had him do a 3D scan, so he's like fully 3D scan. So I have a 3D model of Will Smith in my computer, and I can pretty much do whatever I want with it. I can do any animation I want. I can rig it and like, have it move and stuff. So it's an easy way also during COVID time to do like creative pieces with him.
I'm sure many computer nerds would like literally kill to have your 3D scan of Will Smith. It's sort of like you can't have the real thing, but you can have the computerized version.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, at least, yeah. I mean, it's not the real thing, but yeah, I have the virtual version of it, of him.
Because it's funny, I was talking to someone recently about fast fashion, and this new technology, which I'm sure you know about, is where you have like your avatar and then you buy clothes for the avatar.
Right.
And obviously, like, you have now a version of Will Smith in a kind of 3D version, which is basically potentially what the future might hold in terms of for all of us, that we create our own kind of avatar kind of characters, and that we dress them, we go into the kind of world. And so I kind of want to get your opinion on how that kind of works and how you might see it for the future.
It's very interesting, because with all the Zoom call we do, with all the virtual meeting we do, we only show our virtual appearance, and like we show more of like your virtual appearance than your real appearance. I feel like the only person who sees me in real life is my girlfriend and the person I buy my baguettes, you know, like when I go to the boulangerie, you know. And other than that, like I'm mostly on Skype or on Zoom or whatever, and sometimes I go and shoot and then I meet real people, but otherwise it's like just a virtual avatar of myself that people see. And yeah, what if we could actually customize that avatar and do like something more interesting and less boring than just like a video call of yourself? So I think it's really interesting, and I think the whole COVID situation has been speeding up, you know, this idea of virtual self, and people have been like sort of like digesting it and have been exposed to this idea more and more, opposed to before the pandemic. And I was actually thinking that I was thinking about like brand's idea, where it's like a brand that only exists online based. I don't know if you can still hear me. Oh, can you still hear me, Jamie?
Yeah, I can hear you now. Sorry, we had a little bit of a signal failure.
Yeah,
fine.
Yeah, I'm rendering stuff on my computer right now, and the rendering just crashed completely and just blocked my computer. I'm sorry.
So carry on. What was you saying?
No, I was talking about this kind of like brand idea that I had, where you could like map, pretty much you could map, you know, your digital clothes, you know, when you do calls or when you do like whatever, or even like accessories like a necklace or something. You're like a brand like Louis Vuitton and you want to sell like a new necklace, but nobody wants to buy it because nobody goes outside anymore, so you can't show off your beautiful like 2,000 pounds necklace. So what if you could do like a thing where you just have it, you know, on the call and just maps on your body and moves accordingly? So
there's a lot of, and they have that as well. I've seen like on LinkedIn this animator where he's got two different versions. So he's got the one version where they're both walking, so one's got one outfit and the other one's got the other outfit, and one's real life, one's an avatar,
right?
And it's just like, but he's got a different outfit, and it's absolutely fascinating how he can kind of morph that thing. It's not like it's just a still image where you can just add something on. It's actually moving.
That's insane. Yeah, I think we're a bit early, because I think it demands a lot of calculations, you know, and a lot of like computer power. But when we see like what Snapchat is doing with like face filters, and you can even do like with the there's like a face filter that turns you into like an anime character, and it's like believable, you know, it's like very, very well done. I'm sure that in like 2 years, 3 years, we'll be able to dress, you know, to film ourselves and have like a really, really cool outfit, like just like mapping on our body, and I think it's gonna be cool.
do you think it's right though? I don't know. I love technology, because I think it's amazing that we can have a communication from where I'm at and where you're at. But I don't know. Like, I'm slightly like, a bit apprehensive and a bit scared, and go, is it right for us to be pushing digital so far to have an avatar? Like, what? I mean, there was a film years and years ago where like, I think it was like that. In one scene, there was a really big, big fat guy, and he was an avatar as a woman on this virtual thing. And it's sort of like maybe that will happen. That instead of us creating avatars of our actual selves, we'll be manipulating so much that we won't even be the same gender anymore, and it will be totally different. Instead of having, I don't know, being really, really big, you'll be really, really small.
Now it's interesting. I always tend to embrace technology before reflecting on what harm it can cause to our population, you know. So I think it's like every new thing, you know. It can be done in a good and in a bad way. And I think people will abuse it. Some people are gonna make great things out of it. But if it can help people feel more confident, like, you know, if some people are like not so confident about their themselves, like they don't like their body or they don't like something on their face or whatever, like if they can in some way still like exist and like be a part of a community and feel comfortable through like a filter or through like whatever, I'm like, why not? But in a way, as you said, like it can maybe push people to just stay home and never get out of their
house. And also I think because there is a lot of kind of mental health about kind of
right.
people comparing themselves on social media, Instagram, and then they're doing these. I said to someone the other day, I watched this crazy little video of this girl doing this pose on Instagram, and she was showcasing her body naturally. And then she did a video afterwards that you slide to it that's showing a position that makes her body look right. smaller. Like she was like, straighten that back leg, lift that hip. And it's just like, what mentality are you going, this is okay to go, I really want to look great. So I'm manipulating. And I know because I am a movement director and I work with people, and that's my job to make people's bodies look great. But it's a bit of a strange one to present yourself in that sort of way. And I think adding those kind of filters on, I think people, I think then you had a kind of wave of trend, people going hashtag no filter and be all natural and stuff. And so when you have these avatars that you want to kind of, you're upset about a certain aspect of yourself, so you make your avatar look a certain way, there's sort of like a mental deficiency or mental health issue that kind of is arising there.
I hear you totally, and I think it's a lot about, you know, being confident in yourself and stuff like that. And people, I feel like there's like most people are not confident in their body and in the way they appear and stuff like that, and I understand why sometimes they hide behind all these, or as you said, like all these attitude or this posture, you know, when they take a photo. Just so they look better. I mean, to me, I kind of see the creative side of that. You know, like when the face filter came in and when Instagram made it, they created like a software where you can create your own face filter, and you can, and so it opened up, you know, a whole realm of creativity where people were making their own face filter, and that's why face filters are so interesting, because they are fueled by all these like independent creator in their house, you know, just doing their own thing. And I felt like the trend has grown bigger because of that. So I like this, the creative approach, you know, and this kind of like, we give people the tools and they make something cool out of it. But at the same time, there's like, it's like a 50-50. I feel like it's cool, but it's at the same time, very, very bad. It's never like perfect. Yeah. It's never all green.
It sort of reminds me of that kind of, the Facebook scandal of like the whole data situation, like people were going like, oh, you can be connected to whoever and data and all that sort of thing. Then people realized that actually they control a lot of power and they can manipulate people. And wasn't it the Cambridge Analytica scandal with
the Cambridge scandal? When they sold our informations to
Yeah, and people would like, and I think at the time people were like, this is really cool, this is amazing, you can get all this data and all that sort of thing. And then we realized actually that's quite bad. And so I'm not saying that I think technology and the dish, and I think there's a side of it that's really cool and really amazing, where you have all these digital content creators that are creating these amazing things and you change your face and it is amazing. But I think it's sort of like having a kind of council to go, how far is it that you can push it where it becomes dangerous?
Yeah, I agree. I agree with you. There should be rules, you know, it shouldn't be like something wild that can go like very far, like very like dangerously far, if I can say so. I think, it should always be like in a certain frame, if I can say so. Yeah, for sure. But you know, like I lived in Japan at some point. I lived in Tokyo, and I heard about this whole phenomenon called ikikomori. Ikikomori, it's like the Japanese name for it. It's like kids, like mostly teenagers, mostly boys, who never leave their room. So they stay for sometimes like 4 years, and they never ever leave their room. You know, they just stay, and someone like bring them food, or like their mom, or they have like caretaker who come and check on them every day or every 2 days to make sure that they have everything they need. But they because they have this kind of like, they immerse themselves in this kind of like surreal bubble, you know, and they are afraid of everything. They're afraid of like human contact. They're afraid of getting a job. They're afraid of the pressure of the society, you know, and so they usually play a lot of video games. They watch a lot of films. They just stay home, and they're afraid to go outside. And when you look at these people's appearance in the video games they play and in real life, so in real life, there are these like skinny little Japanese person with like, you know, like just like in sweatpants the whole time and like, yeah, and like sleepers and whatever. And in the game, they are the most extravagant, you know, like character. Sometimes they are a girl and they have long blue hair and they have this crazy dress. And you know, like, so these people, so there's such a contrast between what they would love to look, you know, I mean, well, like, let me rephrase that, how they would love to appear and how they actually appear in real life. And I think, you know, this gap between like, okay, I'm someone who could be extrovert, I'm someone who could show like a crazy outfit, but because of the society, I'm not able to do it because I'm scared. So I'm just staying home, but I still have this capacity and this will, you know, to be like an extravagant person with like cool ideas and creativity and whatever. But because there's like kind of a wall, you know, that blocks them. So it's, I don't know. I thought it was interesting. Yeah, an interesting way to see like that they are not just like kids who stay home and don't do anything. You know, they have this crazy life online, you know, and
that's mental. Is there a large population of these people in Tokyo doing this then? They just stay at home and they're just hermits.
I mean, it's not the majority, but there are, I don't know the percentage exactly, but it's a thing, you know. It's like, it's, everybody knows about it, and it's like a real thing, you know, Japan.
Is it mostly just, I wonder, is it just the culture in Japan? I wonder if it's any in any other kind of country or community that happens. Is it just a Japanese culture?
I think it's related to the fact that their everyday life is very stressful, you know, like especially the work life is nothing compared to like European countries, for instance, or even the States. You know, it's like everything is very, there's a lot of pressure in any job you do. And you see it, you know, like when you live in Japan, like someone from like any job, you, like someone who is just like making sure that there is no like traffic jam, you know, he's going to do his job like perfectly, you know, he's going to do his job like he's doing, like he's a I don't know, like a space engineer, if you know what I mean, you know, it's like, there is nobody takes his job lightly, if I can say so, like, you know, loosely.
That's crazy, isn't it? I was meant to, I actually did a shoot in Japan via Zoom for Christmas. And I only wish that I was over there. I mean, if it was obviously normal COVID situation, in normal situation, COVID wasn't around, I would have flown over there. And I'm desperate to go to Japan and see how the culture is and stuff, and see the differences, like how they, I mean, I've only had a small kind of experience doing the shoot over a couple of days of the differences on set and stuff and how things work, but I'm interested to know how they think and how they kind of see the world, how they see kind of outside of Japan, because obviously you've just said, I mean everyone does their job so precisely, like they're doing kind of like a bomb explosion, what they call it, the person who diffuses a bomb, like it's a mental how other people kind of, I don't know, like do their lives, isn't it? Like, it's just, well, for me, I'm just fascinated, but I just thought that story about someone who doesn't leave for like 4 years, I find that absolutely mental. And this is kind of what I want to go back to exactly, is that the whole digital thing, that once we get these avatars, what is the reason to leave? Like, it's like Facebook and Google now, I think it's Facebook and Google, have said to their employees that they, if they don't want to come into the office, they don't have to ever leave it working.
Yeah. I've seen that this morning, yeah, that they were saying that the 9 to 5 is dead, like the, you know.
Yeah. So what is the future then of this 9 to 5 then? Like, is there some companies that will make it mandatory that in maybe 2 years' time, when COVID is maybe kind of manageable, that you have to go into an office? Because then how the conversation would be like, well, that my friend at this company is doing it, so why do we have to do it? And I'm just going, where all these kind of co-working spaces and stuff, will people ever use them again?
Yeah, no, but yeah, I hear you. I mean, I think to me, it's like the same for as you said, like working from home or even like showing ourselves as like digital avatar or whatever. I think it's all about balance. You know, it's all about doing it not in the extreme. You know, so like, I think it's a great thing that all these companies understood that you don't need to come every single day at work, and that sometimes you can stay home because you're more efficient and you don't have meetings, so you can just like work from home, and you're gonna work like maybe like twice as fast as you would do at the agency with all the, you know, all the
noise and all that sort of thing.
The noise, exactly. Yeah, yeah. So I think it's all about balance. It's like, you know, it's like, I don't know, it's like eating too much sugar, you know what I mean? Like, you can still eat sugar, but you shouldn't eat too much of it, because otherwise you're going to get health issues. But you still eat it because it's great, but you don't. So it's a very, very basic comparison, but I feel like it's the same for like all these new things. It's like, it's great. I think we should embrace it, but we should always do it in a way that is not too extreme.
Yeah, because as soon as we've gone on lockdown and Shoreditch House opens, I'm there at Soho. In the co-working space, because I honestly love working next to people. Yeah. I honestly love it. Like, as much as I spend, like, sometimes I'll spend like 3 days, 12 hours a day on literally sitting where I am right now on my computer, and obviously with you doing CGI as well, it's still the same way as well. But there comes to a point where like my brain can't handle it anymore, because I'm just I haven't moved, one. And two, I haven't had any interaction apart from my friends and family who I've spoken on the phone to or I've seen in my house.
Mm-hmm. No, yeah, I hear you. But you know, like I traveled around. I lived in Paris, I lived in Amsterdam, and I lived in Tokyo. And for about 8 years. You know, I was like around. I was not in Annecy, where I live now. And after like these three big cities with my girlfriend, we were like really thinking, okay, what do we want to do? What do we want for our daily life? And how do we want to, where do we want to spend it? You know, when we thought we would come back to France, and we came back here, you know, in Annecy. It's a fairly small town. It's like, not, it's not super tiny. It's not huge. It's like kind of like this middle sized town. And because I'm going a lot to Paris, these days I'm lucky enough to go around Europe a little bit for some work and shoot and stuff, and so I would say I'm like 50% here, 15% on the road, and same here, you know. It's like to me it's the perfect balance. I never get bored of like staying here, and I never get overwhelmed of staying in a big city, you know. I'm like always at this sweet spot, and I think it's I mean, at least for me, you know, I need this change in order to be able to to have a life that I don't have time to feel bored. You know what I mean? Like, so I always need this kind of like balance between like, I need the calmness of my home. I need the fact that it's very easy. I can do, everything is close. I can walk or take my bike and go everywhere around. It's very easy. And I can focus on project. And then when I need to like meet people, I want to party, or I want to go to museums or exhibition when it's open, you know. I'm in these big cities and I can do it. So at least for me, you know, it's all about balancing things out, you know, and not putting like everything at one place or like just doing always one thing.
Yeah, because I'm really, really inspired by architecture. Like, a lot of like my pictures at the moment, and have been for a while, have always been like, the space inspires me, or painting inner spaces inspired me, and then an idea comes out from it. And I'm always looking at new, interesting architectural places to shoot things and do that. And I just want to know, like, from when you first started as a director, what were your kind of main influences, and how has it changed since then?
I mean, I feel, you know, like when people ask me like what inspires you, it's always hard to pin down. because I would say it's like it's such a mix of so many things. In my work, I always want to have a sense of surrealness, if I can say so, you know, like, of like something surreal. You know, I like to depict like the world as it is, but to add like a little layer of like something that's a bit off, that's a bit like different, you know, and that's a bit surreal. And you know, I've been very passionately inspired by work of directors like Miyazaki, for instance, you know, like Hayao Miyazaki, which we did like the Spirited Away, the Moving Castle, you know, all these very like interesting like animated movies, because to me they are dealing with surreal concepts in a very spiritual way, especially for Miyazaki, but also in a very very clever way, because they always mix this spirituality and this surreal element with real life things. And I think that's the key to make something surreal very interesting, because you have to bring in, that's why, you know, in all my creation I have like people wearing like actual like Nike sweater, or like, because even if they are in this kind of like crazy colorful world, I want them to wear clothes that we have in our everyday life, basically. Mm-hmm. And so yeah, so I mean Miyazaki, I mean it's just one of them, but in terms of influence, you know, there's a French director that I love called Gondry, that you must probably know, Michel Gondry, yeah. Who does stuff very differently from me, actually, because he does everything practically. Does a lot of practical effects with like puppets and with like mechanism, you know, it's like he's like doing more stuff practically than he's doing VFX. But what I loved with his work, and you know, like one of my favorite movies, Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind, with Jim Carrey and And you know, like in this movie, like he's dealing with like a very very normal and very real concept of people who wants to, you know, when you have a breakup and you want to like remove that the person you broke up with, you want to remove her from your memory. Mm-hmm. But instead of like doing it in a very like down to earth way, he thought about this idea of like having people who go to like a doctor who actually literally like removes your memory from your brain, so you don't remember a thing about your relationship. Mm-hmm. And I love that, you know, I love this idea of taking a very human, a very real issue in a way, you know, and just like spinning it and twisting it in a way that feels a bit more poetic and a bit more fictional.
Yeah, I can actually visualize that sort of like, instead of like just putting in the back of your mind, you take a chunk out and sort of, and that chunk can be visually and cinematography. It could be something else, and the chunk goes somewhere else, and then you go into a different world, and then that world is kept over there and stuff. Yeah. And I think it is about kind of, I've always kind of gravitated towards relatable subjects that people can relate to. And I think all the most successful kind of films that have always resonated with me, or from my friends, is if the things like the recent, I think it was a BBC series of It's a Sin, that drama. Mm-hmm. I mean, everyone can relate to kind of the AIDS crisis and what happened there. And I think that if you tap into kind of what's relatable and make it kind of very humanistic, I think you're definitely kind of on a winning streak, because then people could go, oh yeah, I've experienced that. Or, oh yeah, it's a really interesting thing, because I've been through that heartbreak, and I only wish that I could kind of get rid of that thought.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, no, exactly. I think it's the key to, and as soon as you have this relevancy, you know, as soon as you have this element that people can connect to, you can do it in any way you want. You know, you can do it in 2D animation. You can do it in like live. I mean, yeah, you can really like play with it, as long as this core idea is like connecting with people. Mm-hmm. Definitely, I agree with you.
And so, when we wound up the podcast episode, what we usually do is do a give back, and I'd love to know and just pick your brain to understand what has inspired you, maybe early on in your career or even in life, even that's been a book or film. I know we've mentioned a couple of references and stuff, but what would you kind of give back as an inspiration to people in our audience?
I mean, there was one, I mean, yeah, there were so many triggers in my life, and it's kind of, it's yeah, as, I always struggle with this question because I have like many different influences that made it happen. But I think there was one artist, you know, because I used to work in advertising before I got into directing. I used to work in advertising as an art director. And I always, I did that for a couple of years. And I was always following this artist called Jonathan Zawada, who is an Australian artist who used to live in LA, but now he's back in Australia. And he was doing a lot of cover art. He did the Flume cover art, the recent ones. He did a lot of work for his label. And I mean, he was such an interesting talent for me. And he was kind of the trigger. And I was like, okay, I want to be that guy. I want to be that guy who only, because he was always putting statements like, oh, I'm not doing too much commercial work because I really want to do like artistic stuff. And I'm trying to like, you know, like focus on gallery, on like on installations, you know, on like R&D, you know, like anything that can that is important to him more than answering a brief or, you know, like
yeah.
And that was kind of like the trigger for me, and that's why I left my job. And I spoke with the guy, and he gave me some very good motivation to do so. And so yeah, I mean, he was kind of the trigger. So I think it's when people, you know, like when they start in this kind of like field or in any field, and like it can be art, but it can be like engineering, can be like any other work. I think you always need this kind of like people to look up to. You're like, okay, I want to become the same kind of person as this person in like 10 years. And I think it gives you kind of like a beacon, like a direction at least, you know. And if you can talk to that person and ask her like, how did you get there, it's not about like becoming someone else. It's more about like having an example of like, okay, this guy made it, how did he made it, and how can I be inspired by that person to get there. I don't know, that's kind of my
it's interesting, isn't it? Because I mean I'm reading a book called Green Lights by Matthew McConaughey, and I'm fascinated, and our audience and all my friends will know that I always talk about process and journey. Like, I don't really care like where you are at the moment. I want to know, what did you do to get there, and what was you inspired by, and what was your journey? Like you said, you were an art director, so obviously had a massive influence in your way of interpreting brand brief, and being on the opposite side.
Yeah.
To then being a director, because obviously as in an agency, you know what clients are like, you know how
to brief. Exactly.
So when you respond to it, you know, already know. So it's about that sort of thing, because some people just go straight into directing and they have to learn how to respond to a brief from a client and stuff. So it's always finding that sort of the understanding of that process of someone going, I love where you are, but I'm like, but how did you get there? How many times did you fail? Yeah. What directions did you go? Well, that didn't work, and that didn't work. Because then I know if I then have an opportunity and I've already learned from someone that said, oh, that way doesn't work. Well, then I can make a choice going, actually, it might not work for him or her, but it might work for me. But do I want to take that advice or not? And I think that's really fascinating.
Yeah. I mean, if I could just, now that you're saying, I can maybe real quick develop on that subject. So I used to be an art director in advertising agencies. And in advertising agencies, you don't choose your project. You have people like just give you a brief and you have to respond it and you have to work on it. This, even if you hate the brand or even if you don't like the project or whatever. And one of the key thing when I left my job and I started freelancing and wanting to go towards directing was my main motto and my main motivation was that, okay, I only take projects that I care about, that I feel like I'm going to have fun working on them, basically. And I was very, very serious about it, you know, so I almost to the point where at the beginning I didn't like have enough money to pay my rent anymore, because I was just like, I didn't really want to take any project that I didn't feel like I would like to do, you know. And I was like, I'm done with like doing a I don't know, like an animation for a Razor brand or whatever, you know, like I'm done doing like, and I really, really focused on that. And I think that was kind of my line of my direction when I and so far so good. I sometimes have to do one or two stuff just for like just to pay myself, you know, but otherwise, you know, it's...
it's true, though. I don't know if you know, going back to this kind of book about Matthew McConaughey, in one of the chapters, he talks about how he was the rom-com guy and he was getting paid a shit ton of money, but he wasn't doing the stuff that he really wanted to do, wasn't offered it, like the dramas or Interstellar that we know and stuff. And so he decided that, okay, I'm not going to do any rom-coms. I'm not going to do anything until I get the stuff that I really want to do. Mm-hmm. And he waited, I think it was 20 months without work. And one within 6 months of him turning down loads of stuff, one rom-com commercial came along, was like, we'll pay you 40 million to do it. And he still turned it down. And he waited for 20 months and then he started getting... I think he started then getting things that he really wanted. And I think we have to kind of echo that to a lot of people who are listening, that sometimes you have to risk it, because if not, you're going to get into that. If you keep accepting things that you don't really want to do, you start kind of getting into people's perspective or perception of what they think you really want to do, rather than going, actually, I don't want to do that. And I think, and then everyone around you goes, oh, okay, he doesn't really want to do that. And then maybe they start asking you questions or they start offering you different things.
Because what do you want to do then? Yeah, exactly. What do you want to do? Yeah.
And I think it's a risky, bold move, and you might fail and you might not come back from it, but would you rather do something that you really want to do, or would you rather be unhappy doing things that you don't want to do? I think that's the question.
Definitely. No, yeah, definitely. I agree with you. I think as long as if you start, you know, in this process of like, okay, I'm just getting one or another one, or this one is paying well, I'm going to take it. And it's like super boring to do, but you get your good paycheck and you have this comfort. As soon as you accommodate to the comfort of like getting a regular paycheck, especially at the beginning, you won't go back to struggling. You know what I mean? And I think so. It's better to like start and struggle right away, and then make a living out of stuff that you like doing, then starting with like stuff that you kind of hate doing, but you get decent money for it. And then, because otherwise it's going to be way worse to like come back from that, I think.
I think so, yeah. Because everyone's be saying, everyone be offering you the things that you don't really want to do. And similarly with like the Matthew McConaughey, 40 million. I mean, we're not being paid 40 million. But
you know, really, Jamie? You're not paid that much?
This is my day rate.
Right.
No, but it is true though. Just really do follow what you really want to do. And I believe the universe will look after you, and people around you will start noticing, go, actually, that's what he really wants to do. And I think it's even, I've seen it in many directors and many photographers who do something for a passion. Like they shoot like a really interesting passion project, and then suddenly that passion project is the job that gets them the commercial work, because it's what they're interested in doing. Because most of the time, these clients won't give you the green light for the kind of riskier stuff that you're doing in your passion projects.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's what I believe. Well, anyway, I want to say thank you very, very much for giving me the time in 360. It's been great to chat to you and also talk about CGI in the future and potentially what our avatars might look like.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. No, it was great talk, Jimmy. I loved the conversation, and thanks for inviting me on the podcast.
Brilliant. Thank you.
This is 360 Yourself, and I'm Jamie Neal. Thank you very much for taking a moment to listen to our wonderful guests. Please subscribe to our podcast to access all our brilliant guest episodes. They are released every Sunday at 12 p.m. We are available on all listening platforms: Spotify, Pocket Cast, Overcast, Google Podcasts, and Castro. You can also find us on Instagram at 360_yourself, Twitter at yourself360, and our host at Jamie Neal JN. Thank you for listening.